On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, how to choose a triathlon coach, when to hire that coach, smart training plans, and the five foods to avoid if you want a six-pack. The Endurance Hour podcast starts, how about right now?
People, are you ready?
And a big welcome back to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 152. We are on a consistent streak here. That's right. We have been cranking out new episodes every week for the last, 2 months or so. This week I'm going solo, and I've got four great topics, three from special guest interviews. We've got three coaches joining us today. We've got Trista Francis out of Colorado. Her website is ITZ Multisport. It stands for In the Zone Multisport. We've got T2 coaching coach Wendy Mater out of Colorado as well. She's moving to Atlanta. And then we've got Greg Gallagher. And Greg is from Speed Theory Multisport. A lot of coaches here, but I got some great content for you to share. And something I'm working on, that's why I thought I'd bring it up today, is the five foods to avoid if you want a six-pack. It's not the six-pack that I'm so concerned about. It's the foods to avoid. And I personally am trying to lose the LBs, trying to get that power-to-weight ratio where it should be so I can be somewhat competitive, but not so much competitive with other athletes, although in the back of my mind, probably. But I just want to be better than I was last year. And there are certain categories or areas that I'm working on. And I will tell you that I'm working on some swimming things. Actually, I'm working with Wendy a little bit here and there, sending her some videos. And this is great if you are looking for a coach. What a perfect tie-in. If you are looking for a coach, but you can't find one locally, don't despair. Don't find it as a downside, because there is a great way to get coaching with someone who is not in your city or town or zip code. Wendy's in Colorado. I've been sending her videos of some swimming I've been doing. She's actually sent back some video responses based on my video saying, okay, work on this. This is what I see. And send me what you've done when you make those adjustments. I think it's fantastic. Same thing can be said if you're giving someone a video of your running form. I actually posted something on Instagram maybe a month and a half ago or so. My Instagram handle is I am Dave Erickson. I am standing for Iron Man. I am Dave Erickson. So I posted something there, and I think it was a video clip of just my running form on the treadmill, and I got some great feedback, some feedback from Roger, some other feedback from others about how I should, you know, have my hips forward a little bit more, where my foot strike was. Very helpful, and I think about these things. So there's that visualization that athletes can go through, even though their coach is not side by side or sees them on a weekly basis in person. Anyway, so I'm working on some swimming techniques, and Wendy's been helpful with that. Cycling is about putting in the miles right now, or is time in the saddle. And then running, of course, is just, you know, got to drop those calories. That seems to be the best thing for me. What about you? What do you find is the best exercise to burn the most calories? I think running is the exercise of the three that we do. I know that swimming is the least impact on your joints and your overall body. And then it comes, then goes to the cycling, and then running is the most hardest impact. And that's why you need the most recovery if you're going to run, you know, some big days throughout the week. Anyways, I digress. So we got five foods to avoid if you want to obtain that six pack. And there's some things in there that I'm already incorporating into my regular routine. And it's kind of hard. It really is when some of these things taste so good. Let's go ahead and kick things off this week by talking with Trista Francis, and then we'll segue into Greg, because both of these are about hiring a triathlon coach. And Trista has a background in sports medicine, and we're going to talk about some questions, or at least with her and I, some questions you can ask your coach on whether or not you should hire them in the first place. So here we go. Here is Trista Francis on how to choose a triathlon coach. I love this topic because at the point of this recording, some people are finishing up their season and they're preparing for their next year's season. And that means getting serious, hopefully, about their expectations. And that sometimes means hiring a coach. You are a coach, a longtime coach. What should people look for in determining if they should hire a coach and what that coach can offer them?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Well, there's a lot of coaches out there nowadays, and coaches have different philosophies. There's lots of types of coaches. You know, there's the cheerleader coach. There's the really technical coach that, you know, is data driven. There's some of us, like I would consider myself, you know, to be both. I'm very data driven, but, I can be that big cheerleader as well. And so I think the first thing that you need to look at is, you know, especially if you've had experience with a coach, is what type of coach are you looking for? What is their methodology? What is their philosophy and training? You know, have you done lots of intensity for an Ironman and you work better with maybe more endurance training and that type of coaching or vice versa? So I think the first thing is to kind of figure out what kind, you know, do you want a coach that bases off of experience, or do you want someone that's really understands physiology and, you know, has degrees in, you know, in those kind of science backgrounds, you know, especially if you're data driven. There are some, I get a lot of clients that are returning from injury. I have my background is sports medicine, and I have a lot of clients coming back returning from injury, you know, and so that's important, you know. And then once kind of you find that baseline of, I think, their core, just kind of their core philosophy, you know, then it comes down to the services, you know. How responsive do you want your coach? You know, are they working a full-time job and coaching on the side? Are they investing 100% in coaching and they coach full-time? You know, there are definitely some athletes that want their coach, you know, at a moment's notice. And there's other athletes that, like, you know, don't bother me. You know, they don't want, as a coach, they don't want me calling them and checking up on them, you know? And so you kind of have to see what that coach offers. And then I think lastly is a connection. You know, you have to be you have to feel comfortable with your coach. You have to be able to communicate with your coach. And you, at the end of the day or at the end of the year, you know, however long it takes, you need to be able to trust your coach at a certain level. And that's something, you know, that trust is established over time. And I think those things are really essential. And there are so, you know, when I started coaching 10 years ago, I think there were like maybe two coaches in a 10-mile radius. And now I think I think there's like 20 coaches in a 10-mile radius around me now, you know. And so there's definitely a lot to choose from, you know, but that's where you just have to figure out what's most important to you. Is it proven results? Is it them being, you know, a world champion athlete, or is it them being a world champion coach?
That's an excellent point, because I was wondering about certificates or certain type of training that the coach may have, because some may not be certified by a certain agency, but they're proven winners. They know how to win, and they have results. So that's kind of a balance, right, of who to choose.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with that. You know, I keep my certifications current. You know, I have many certifications. I feel that is important. We're invested in our national governing body, which, like USA Triathlon or USA Cycling. I also have my credentials as a licensed and certified athletic trainer. And that's really something to look at when you're looking at coaching fees, you know, because, you know, people go, oh my gosh, you know, coaching, you know, they charge 150 and, you know, that person coaches 400. You know, I spend a lot, like me personally, with my credentials, I spend a lot of money every year going to continuing education courses, for three different certifications. You know, some people say, oh, you don't have this certification or that certification. Honestly, I don't make enough to be able to, you know, or have enough time to be able to manage that many certifications, but I put an emphasis on what I think is important. You know, so when you're looking at those coaching fees, you know, and renewal fees, I pay thousands of dollars every year annually to be able to maintain my certifications and stay current with the latest and greatest.
Kind of what's, if you can kind of go through the spectrum and bullet points of some of the minimum services that a coach would offer that would be enough for, and compared to all the top ones? Because some people can be charging, you know, like you said, $400 a month for mm-hmm. coaching services, but those might include a run analysis, a swim analysis. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is a video exchange or a Skype, once a week Skype call, or mm-hmm. or it could just be kind of a cookie cutter, here is a beginner 16-week program that I'm going to plug you into because that's what your level is and that's what you're going to pay for. But I did put time into it once, but it fits what you need at this point. There's kind of a spectrum there.
Yeah, there are, you know, and so it's no secret. You can get training plans online. You can any sort of training plan from a sprint triathlon to, an intermediate Ironman finish. And those cookie cutter plans are going to be usually a plan that a coach they have a plan written mm-hmm. and they're going to allow you to have access to that plan. And it's really not going to be, it's just a cookie cutter, right? It's not going to be catered to your needs or your days off or your work schedule or what have you. And that's going to come in anywhere between maybe $60 to $100 a month. Or you can buy one drop plans where, you know, I think you can get them for even like $25. Mm. The next level would be, I think a cookie cutter plan that comes in probably around $150, $200. Coaches may not tell you it's a cookie cutter plan, but it could be a cookie cutter plan, but they're manipulating it a little bit. You know, they're giving you a certain day off. You know, they're allowing you to maybe send them an email once a month is a kind of a, this is how it went, you know, to kind of guide, you know. So a little bit of feedback, a little bit of interaction. And then as you continue to get up, you get into, I think there can be even a stage next and another step up where, you know, okay, you can, you know, we talk once weekly, or you're allowed a one phone call a month and an email weekly to then kind of guide the coach as to how you're recovering, how you're responding to the training that's in. And then kind of the big granddaddy of all, you know, which is upwards of probably, you know, 300, is full custom coaching. That's where 99% of my clients fall. And that's where, generally the plans are built week to week. I'm making changes within the week based off of recovery and how they're doing. We have probably five contacts a week where I'm giving feedback on a workout or that sort of thing. It includes nutrition consulting. It includes, you know, time with the athlete to work on running efficiency, you know, cycling mechanics, handling skills, those sorts of things. And so it really is, you know, what I would call a full custom coaching package. Definitely, I think it's hard as an athlete to go, okay, I've never hired a coach and I'm looking at these plans and it's kind of hard to know the dynamic of the relationship you're going to have as far as, okay, so I can only email him once a week, or I can only talk to him once a month, you know? And so if that's something that really is a concern to you, you know, you might want to just look at that full custom coaching where you really do have unlimited access to your coach. And the thing that I've learned as a coach is that it kind of has its ebbs and flows. You know, there's going to be times where you're talking more, especially at the beginning, and then it's going to kind of, you know, wane off as they get used to the language that you're, you know, the workouts and how you recover, you know, and really start getting that dialed in.
Again, to follow up with Trista, if you want to follow her website, it's very informative. It's itzmultisport.com. In the Zone, Multisport with Trista Francis. So that's how to choose a triathlon coach. When to hire a triathlon coach? You may be asking yourself, you know, I still have 6 months before my A race, or I'm not really even into my training right now. Is now a good time? And do I need to hire more than one coach? Maybe some questions you can consider. Well, here's Greg Gallagher from another local guy who I talk to on a regular basis who has a coaching business, speedtheorymultisport.com. And we're going to talk about when to hire that tri-coach.
Many of you may be thinking, hey, I've been self-coached for years, or maybe I just completed my first year as an athlete, and now I want to take it to the next level. I need to hire someone to help me get the best out of myself. Greg, you're a coach. You've hired coaches in the past. Let's talk about how to choose a coach, when's a good time to hire a coach, and the pros and cons of maybe picking a training plan online versus having a personalized training plan. First of all, when is it a good time to start seriously considering hiring a coach?
Well, I think it turns into, are you doing it for fun and you don't really care about your results? Or are you a competitive person? And normally, if you're a triathlete, you're type A, and it's all about, okay, this is what I got to do. I've got to do this, and I got to be good at that. And so if you feel that you're wanting to step it up to the next level, and like you say, maybe you did it for a year, maybe you've done some local races and you really enjoyed it. Now you're going, okay, I know I can do better. Well, if you're not sure how to do better, well, a coach is going to actually get you to the level that you want to be at. It might not happen over the first year. You might not go from this kind of athlete all the way up here in 1 year, but over a period of time, that coach will get you to the next level. And it just, when you feel you're ready. I mean, I've been doing triathlon for 26 years. And so in 2006 is when I did my first Ironman, and I hired a coach because I wasn't sure. You know, I raced other distances and had no problem, but once it got into that Ironman distance, that's a lot of unknown. And that was something that I had no experience in. And so that's when I hired a coach and went from there.
What was it about the Ironman that said, you know, maybe I need some help on this one and I can't do it on my own?
The shorter distances, they're over in a couple of hours. But an Ironman, I mean, you do something wrong, you could be out there 17 hours. And that's trying to figure out what a plan to get you to that finish line. And if you have no idea, that's a big endeavor to take on without any experience. So,
was there any pride involved or ego involved as these type A personalities? I need help.
I was willing to get help because I knew that this was a big deal, and I had no idea how to finish it. So I didn't have a problem getting a hold of a coach and asking some questions and figuring out, okay, yeah, I can see where I could use the help for finishing this thing.
What kind of questions, if you remember, did you ask that particular coach to find out if they were a good match for you? Or what was it that you heard that says, yes, I want you to coach me, I like what you have to say?
Well, one actually had to do with the coach's experience in the sport. And if the coach has never raced an Ironman distance and has no clue on exactly how to complete one, then I wouldn't hire that coach. And the coach I had completed it and had done numerous of them and had actually went to Kona and went to the Race of World Championships. So from that, I felt they had the level of experience and knowledge to guide me in the right direction.
So it was practical experience, not necessarily they have a certificate.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of book smart people, but book smart people don't mean that they can go out and do the sport just because they read a book.
The application of the information.
Yeah, they don't have that personal experience to know. I mean, you could read a book and it says, oh, this could happen. Well, okay, this guy, it happened to him, and he told me what he had to do to adjust. So personal experience is I think a big issue. Yeah.
Would that trump a certificate?
I if I had two people that said they were coaches and one had a certificate and he had never done an Ironman race before and had no experience, and this guy over here, he didn't have a certificate, but he's done numerous races at that distance and he's done very well, I would choose the guy who's done well over the guy who read a book and doesn't have the experience in that distance.
So what should a person look for, or what kind of communication is necessary maybe at that distance? We'll go ahead and stick with the Ironman distance. What would you need, or what should a person feel as though they need? You know, every week they need to hear some feedback. Is it a matter of a in-person meeting? I'm just kind of getting a feel for other people out there what they should expect or require in a coach that they're hiring.
Well, I can't speak for others. I can speak for myself, and I use a program called Training Peaks, and I know you're familiar with that, Dave. So when you download your workout day, your data goes into this system. Well, it pops up and I get an email and I read over everything. And then I go look at the data to see exactly if you accomplish what we set out to do. And from that, I can leave you a small note. I can leave you a little email or saying, hey, great job, Dave. Everything looked good. At this point in time, we need to look at this. And I think at least once every 2 weeks to have a Skype visit or even a face-to-face or on the phone just to check in and talk to your athletes so you can hear their voice, not trying to guess what they're saying through words on an email. So I don't have a problem talking with my athletes, you know, every couple of weeks. Make it short and sweet and just double check how everything's going. Yeah.
Who's an ideal client for you? As a coach, what kind of clients are you seeking out that you feel you can make the most impact with? Maybe the age grouper, the professional. Is there a spot in between?
I think age group is going to be probably where you're going to see the biggest bang for your buck. You're going to get somebody maybe who doesn't have a lot of experience. Maybe he does, but he wants to go to that next level, and you're going to help him get there. Professional, those guys are there for a reason. They're good enough to get where they're at. And then to try to fine-tune a professional, that's definitely taking on a bigger challenge than it would be taking on an age grouper and working with what time frames they have and their life schedules.
Yeah, they're a lot more serious about it. It's their livelihood. I mentioned this off the top a little bit about training plans online, and you can find these 10, 12, 16-week programs that are kind of cookie cutter for maybe the beginner triathlete. Anything wrong with those?
You know, it all depends on what you want to achieve. If your plan is to cross the finish line and 16 hours and 59 minutes and call yourself an Ironman, grabbing a cookie cutter is, you can do it. But if you have some goals and you want to achieve a specific time, you need to work with a coach that's going to give you an individualized plan. Your plan that if I was to give you is going to be different than an athlete that I had last year doing the same distance. You guys aren't the same. You might have a strength in one of the three disciplines, so maybe you don't need to work as much on that discipline as the other two or the other one that you're a little more weaker in. So if you grabbed a cookie cutter, the cookie cutter doesn't know, the book doesn't know, hey, Dave's an outstanding cyclist. He doesn't need to cycle as much, but his swim, he could work on that or work on a few things in the run. You don't know those things. That's what a coach is figuring those things out for you.
And what I have found in personal experience, it's good to stay with the same coach for multiple years because they know your habits, they know your potential, and they get to know, I guess your little quirks and what works for you and
right.
Your strengths. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and like I had said previously, I'm not going to take on an athlete and tell them that next year after racing one time that I'm going to get him to Kona. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, okay, you have potential because I can see what you've done. Let's make a 2 or 3 year plan and build and say, okay, let's make it a big shot on this 2017. Let's just say that date we're going to get you to race and try to qualify for Kona at that time. But yeah, I mean,
Greg, what is your specialty? What's your favorite of the three sports?
My favorite of the three sports, probably the run. I, 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 I'm a, I feel I'm pretty strong in the run. The swim, I'm okay. The bike, I do fine. But I really think once I get off onto that run is where I can make up some time. So do I need as much training in the run? Not really. I would need more on the bike because that's the big, that's the longest event. And then, you know, put some more effort into the swim and hopefully I won't have to chase as many people.
And here's one more question that you didn't know was coming is if you were to come from one of the three backgrounds prior to triathlon, which one would you have to come from to be the most successful at triathlon? And I think you might say cycling, but I'm not sure.
I think cycling, and again, depending on the distance, if you're an Olympic distance, I mean, yeah, the, everything's so much shorter, but the swim comparable to a, is longer if you were to break the percentages down. So, I mean, if you're an Olympic distance and you're, say you're on the draft legal, you got to be a strong swimmer. You have to be a strong swimmer. I mean, if you don't come from a swimming background in a draft legal race, you're not going to do well because that front pack who all did swimming from 5 years old on, they're going to get out in front. They're going to get in the, on the bike first and you're never going to catch them. So it all depends on the distance.
Speed Theory Multisport with Greg Gallagher. Thank you so much, Greg, for that. And now Wendy Mader, T2 Coaching. I love this. You can follow her on Twitter at T2 Coach Wendy is her handle on Twitter. She's very involved in social media and is great when it comes to Skype consulting. We talk via Skype. Actually, all three of the interviews that we're doing today are from Skype. So if you're interested in following up with her, she's got a great coaching business. She's got some great articles that break down by topic, by discipline on her website, t2coaching.com. So today we're going to talk about SMART training plans. And I say SMART, but it's actually an acronym. And then we're going to go over that here in this interview. It's about 7 minutes long or so. So take it away with Wendy Mader.
When someone has wants to train for a race, the first thing I ask is, what are your goals? And more often than not, I want to finish, or I want to finish under a time. And then that's it. And I'm like, well, let's be a little bit more specific about it. So S stands for specific. Instead of saying you want to finish, even though that should be the goal, especially if it's your first one, we all have goals inside our head that we want to finish in a certain time. And the reason that's important is to be specific with what your goal is, such as a time, is it's kind of sets the tone of your training. Are you training to get the endurance to finish, or are you training with a purpose, with a time goal in mind? So just being a little, you know, fine-tuning the specific areas of your goals that you're trying to do.
Okay, and M stands for, well, three different M's. We got measurable, meaningful, and motivational. So you talk about making your fitness goals measurable.
Measurable, and again, it kind of goes back to what I talked about, specific with a time goal. You're measuring your finish time, or maybe you have a goal of swimming a certain distance. The distance is a measure. It's a unit. What were the other ones? Meaningful. Meaningful. So, you know, again, it goes to your why. Why do you have that certain goal? If you don't have a certain why, then what's the point? It doesn't have meaning. So when you add meaning to the goal, it keeps you motivated to pursue and do the training that you need to do to make that goal happen, if it has a why and a meaning.
And you also want to make this goal, this fitness goal, motivational?
Motivational goal, yeah. I mean, part of adding the meaning to your goal is to keep you motivated, because you want to stay motivated to do what you need to do and training to achieve your goal.
Okay, so we're being specific. We're finding some sort of unit to measure this. Number three, making it achievable or action-oriented.
So achievable also is attainable. You know, just kind of looking back at your past experience, your current fitness, your current time commitment, is it achievable according to your standards of what's achievable. It's kind of, you know, take the example, I want to lose 30 pounds in a month for my high school reunion. And it's not really achievable. You know, losing 30 pounds is kind of drastic and you're probably not going to do it. So let's set some small term goals to make it more achievable for you.
And what do you mean by action oriented?
setting up an action plan to, like a training plan to help you achieve your goal. Instead of just saying, okay, in 3 months, I'm going to go do an Ironman. Well, let's create an action plan in those 3 months. So you not only complete the Ironman, but you complete it healthy and injury free, and you actually enjoy it. I've actually met a lot of people over the years that actually, maybe not an Ironman, but they'll just one day wake up and say, I want to go do a marathon, and they'll just go do it. I mean, that's cool if you can do that, but you're probably more likely to get injured and not really enjoy the process if you don't have an action plan leading up to your goal.
Okay.
And the goal being a race.
Okay.
In this context.
And you mentioned this, but let's be a little more specific with this one. The R can be realistic, relevant, reasonable, and hopefully rewarding.
Rewarding. So realistic. Again, it goes back to if your current fitness level for a 5K is 30 minutes, it's probably not realistic that you're going to do a 3-hour marathon if you can do it 3 miles in 30 minutes. So based on little small short-term goals, some measurable units, some training, making sure you or the athlete knows if it's realistic, either at this, definitely at the start, but even changing the parameters throughout the training, is it still realistic? Okay, maybe you got injured and you missed 2 months of training. So let's modify our goal if it's not as realistic as it was 2 months ago due to uncontrollable circumstances.
Oh, this is great. I love this. Okay, now we're finishing off the acronym with the letter T. So it's time-based, timely, and tangible. I love all these letters. Go ahead.
Time-based. Again, I've kind of already touched on a lot of this, but having that, I want to do an Ironman in 6 months or 5 years or 10 years, having a point of when you're going to achieve your goal, have a time frame of it's going to happen in 2016, it's going to happen in 2020. That's important because, yeah, you can set a goal, but if you don't really set a time and a place and a meaning to that goal, you might not ever do it. What do they say? A dream is just a wish. Something about a dream and a goal and a wish. I don't even know what it is, but we could go to Facebook and find that quote of a dream is just a wish unless you do it, or I don't even know what it is. But it's important to have that timeline of when you want to achieve your goal. And you know, I just had a girl want to talk to me about marathon training. She goes, I want to qualify for Boston. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, but I'm not going to do it in that race in April. And I'm like, why not? You know, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but let's start setting SMART goals. Let's start defining that SMART of training for doing that Boston qualifier. And maybe it is achievable. She's such a new athlete. She's already got it in her mind. Oh, that's a long-term goal. And I'm like, let's make it a short-term goal and let's do it in 6 months. Maybe it's achievable, but until we define the SMART, we don't know yet.
Boy, you must have a lot of eye-opening situations with new athletes or athletes who haven't heard this concept before.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important for the newbie as well as the experienced athlete.
Yeah.
Especially the newbie. And then you just really educate them about what it means to train and what it means to race and the process that they're getting into. Becomes more like, oh wow, cool. It's more than just going to the event and doing it. There's a journey involved in the SMART goal process.
Everyone knows what their end goal wants to be, but they don't always realize the step or the road that it's going to take to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah, this really outlines it well. You can see this outlined on Wendy's website, t2coaching.com. I really like this, the acronym SMART. So recapping, Wendy, I'll put you on the test here. What's the S stand for?
Specific.
M?
Measurable.
A?
Attainable.
R?
Realistic.
And T?
And timely. In a timely manner.
There you go. I love it. Okay, thank you to all three of my guests today, Wendy, Trista, and Greg. And now to an article that I found online. This was actually published middle of last year, but you know, I'm looking for these ways to eat healthy, be smart, and lose the pounds. And if you're wondering, how much weight is he trying to lose? That guy looks great. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm saying it to myself. But thank you anyway. I weigh a little around 190. I fluctuate between 190, 192-ish, 193. My goal would be to get down to 175. 170 would be amazing, but I doubt I can lose 20 pounds before too long. So 15 pounds I think is doable, and I think I can do it. So if you're carrying around a spare tire around your belly, you're not alone. According to this article, 54% of U.S. adults now have abdominal obesity. That's up 46%
from 2000. This is according to a report in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So if you fall into that category, and male abs are considered fat if the waistline measures more than 40 inches, can you believe that? I'm sure you have to account for the height and everything, but if you have a waist that's more than 40 inches, you are considered to be, kind of fat, obese. Sorry to tell you that, but that's the truth. It's time to consider cutting down your consumption of these five foods. Here we go. Number one, refined grains. Not sure what a refined grain is? It's an ingredient found in foods like white rice, white bread, and regular white pasta. A lot of white there. The unrefined stuff, whole wheat, brown rice, and quinoa, is always healthier. Pennsylvania State University researchers found that people who ate whole grains in addition to keeping a healthy diet of fruits and vegetables, low-fat, dairy, and protein, lost more weight from the abdominal area, the group of people who kept the same healthy diet but ate all refined grains. Let me read that again. Pennsylvania State University researchers found that people who ate whole grains in addition to keeping a healthy diet lost more weight from the abdominal area than the group of people who kept the same healthy diet but ate all refined grains. So, that's number one. Number two, potato products. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine found the weight changes of more than 120,000 men and women for up to 20 years. They followed those people. The participants were checked every 4 years, and on average, they gained 3.35 pounds each time, so almost 17 pounds by the time the study was finished. The foods associated with the greatest weight gained? You probably can guess it right now. Potato chips and potatoes. Number three, this one kills me. Red and processed meats. I love the red meats. That same 20-year study found that people who ate more red and processed meat gained weight as well, about one extra pound every 4 years. In another study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, researchers worked with more than 370,000 people and found that folks who ate the equivalent of a small steak a day, that's a lot, gained about 5 pounds in 5 years. Oh, I love the red meat. Frosting. Come on, this is an obvious one, right? Those cupcakes that your coworkers make for those special occasions? Yeah, don't eat them. While the FDA has basically declared war on trans fats, store-bought frosting still contains a not-so-healthy dose of the stuff. So how bad can trans fats be? Researchers at Wake Forest University gave groups of monkeys, they could have easily said adults, right? Gave groups of monkeys two different diets. One group ate trans fats, the other ate unsaturated fats. The results? The group eating trans fats upped their body weight by 7.2% in 6 years, and the other only gained 1.8%. Not only did the trans fats add new fat, it was also responsible for moving fat from other areas to the belly. Check for trans fat in other foods like pre-made baked goods, snack foods, and frozen pizzas. So if you go to Costco, watch out for what you're eating. They've got a lot of pre-made baked goods. Roger, I'm talking to you about those cookies. Avoid them. Well, I guess you don't have to avoid them, Roger. You weigh, 120 pounds wet? All right. Diet soda is number five. This is one that I think we all think, oh, it's diet soda. No big deal. It's easy to get fooled by the zero-calorie label. Yet sodas made with sugar substitutes are believed by many to play a role in weight gain. I'm guilty. A new study published this month, which is actually April of last year, found that people who drank diet soda gained almost three times the amount of abdominal fat over 9 years as those who did not drink the no-cal stuff. Okay, I shall repeat that because that's important. This study found that people who drank diet soda gained almost three times the amount of abdominal fat over 9 years as those who didn't drink it. Sure, that study only looked at adults 65 and older, but consider this. Recent research from the Weizmann Institute of Science, I love all the stuff is sourced, found that mice drinking water with artificial sweeteners, saccharin, aspartame, and sucralose became vulnerable to insulin resistance and glucose intolerance, two things known to lead to weight gain. I hope you found that helpful. I sure did. I know for one thing, diet soda has to go, which I'm already breaking down right now. I'm not doing that as much as I used to. Red meat's going to be hard for me. Potato products, not a big deal. Frosting, not an issue, I don't think, at least not for me. And then refined grains, that's going to be a little tougher. But if you can go with the whole wheat, brown rice, and quinoa, I think you'll be a lot happier. And then also adding the fruits, vegetables, low-fat dairy, and protein. That's it, the five foods to avoid if you want a six-pack. And that will wrap up this shortened episode of the Endurance Hour Podcast, episode 152. Thanks again to my guest today, Greg Gallagher from Speed Theory Multisport, Wendy Mader from T2Coaching.com, and Trista Francis from ITZ. ITZ Multisport, In the Zone with Trista Francis. Hey, if you want to follow us, you can do so by going to Facebook. I think that's our main source of communication with the outside world in social media. Not so much with Twitter, I know, but if you want to follow me, I think it's probably the best bet. I am Dave Erickson on Twitter as well as Instagram, but on Facebook, go to Endurance Hour, easy to find us. And also, we have a YouTube channel where I post a lot of videos. You can find, I think I have over 1,700 videos from the last 4, 5, 6 years covering the world of triathlon, as many of you know, covering Ironman, which I will not be doing this year. It's not in their plans. But I've got hundreds of videos, over a thousand videos with Ironman footage and races, interviews, coaching ideas, product reviews, and that kind of thing. So that's on SBR, Swim, Bike, Run, Vids, V-I-D-S. But I think if you just type in my name or endurance sports, that kind of thing, you'll be able to find me. And I also do some embedded, or I share some of those videos on our Facebook page. Enough with that. Thank you so much for Roger Thompson. We will be back together, obviously. I'm just doing this quick episode here. For Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening this week. Have a great week of training, recovery, maybe if you're racing. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.